you got to win. If you don't win, you know, people and fans will start to ask all kind of questions. And Mark had to say this year that, I promise a better team. So he'll have to live with that. He promised a better team. And what if the team, you know, start on the bad notes? And we don't know. We lost a lot of players. We have some young players, young new players. And hopefully things were going very well.
4 years ago, it was, conference final. 3 years ago, it was second round. Last year, it was first round. So the playoff results have been going in the exact opposite direction, and that's ultimately what the Canadians and what Bergevin and what everybody in the organization have to be judged on.
Welcome back. Hour number three, it's game night. Yeah, it's game night. Habs and Bruins in Quebec City. We'll take you right there at 7 o'clock. Mitch Melnyk, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. That was Sir Savard with Chris Nyland on Off the Cuff on Friday afternoon. And that was Bob McKenzie this morning with Connor McKenna and the gang this morning on TSN 690. McKenzie is back. Ray Ferraro returns tomorrow afternoon. Pierre McGuire has been ahead of everybody.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Dagwoods. Voted called Montreal's best sandwich in Montreal third year in a row. Thanks, Montreal. You gotta love a Dagwood sandwich.
Those slackers, McKenzie and Ferraro. How are you, Pierre?
I'm really good, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Good.
Yeah. Interesting how when he, of course, Bob, when he sat down with the Canadian general managers, he put it to Bergevin face-to-face. When you put it in those terms, where they've been playoff-wise. And that's as it should be. That's the way it is everywhere. Results.
Well, we talked about this the first week I was on with you after the break, and basically said those things. So it wasn't that we're picking on the Canadians as a group, or me in particular as an individual, but that's just the harsh reality of it. That's just a results-oriented business. Serge Savard played a big role in Mark Bergevin being hired by the Montreal Canadiens. So he's vested in this as well. He told the truth. Nobody's trying to pick on the Canadians. They're just trying to tell the truth. The truth is that, it's been rescinding for a while now. And this is a big pressure year. There's no question. This is a big pressure year.
And again, I know you and I will probably agree to disagree for most of the season. Pierre believes, they could get in. Or they might not get in. You believe they're in a battle for a playoff spot this year, right?
I think they're battling for the last three spots in the playoffs. So I think they're either 7, 8, or 9. That's where I think they finish.
Okay.
One of those three spots.
Okay, so you do believe they'll be in the playoffs?
Well, I think they have a legitimate chance to. A lot obviously hinges on health, especially of the goalie, making sure that Jonathan Drouin gets off to a huge start and can get close to 30 goals, and Max can be about 30. And then get some depth scoring. I'm counting on Galchenyuk to have a big year. I think Alex Galchenyuk can have a huge year. But you've got to have a lot of – it's so tight. And here's how I try to explain it. And I'll do this probably – I'll try to make it as quick as I can. Tampa's better. Boston's better. Buffalo's better. I personally think Florida Panthers will be better. I believe Carolina will be better. I don't think Columbus got worse. I think Pittsburgh's going to be okay. I don't think they're going to be the elite team they have been, only because they lost a lot of glue guys in Matt Cullen and Chris Kunitz and Trevor Daley and Nick Bonino. They lost a lot of glue guys, but I still think they're a playoff team. But teams around Montreal have really gotten better, and Toronto obviously has gotten a ton better. So that's why I think it's going to be kind of a helter-skelter kind of a thing for them.
It is possible that some of the teams you think will be better can be better and still not get in.
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct. Again, I haven't even mentioned Detroit, and I do that on purpose because I don't think anybody knows, including the Detroit management team and coaching staff, exactly what they have. I really believe that. And you haven't seen a lot of glowing messages coming out of their camp. You just hear, we're expecting to be better, we're hoping to be better, but you don't hear them say, oh, yeah, we're better for sure. You don't hear that. You haven't heard that from them.
It's going to be a long year in Detroit.
Well, you would think so, but I don't know. It goes back to the premise that you created when we started. You don't really know in a lot of these instances. So if you're running those teams or owning those teams, for instance, Detroit, we'll use them because we just talked about them. The new building, you would hope if you're the Ilitch family, means a little bit more to them opening it up. Some of the guys take a lot of personal pride in making it better. They're hoping that Trevor Daly can be a little bit of a glue person that he was in Pittsburgh and can help them. But again, you don't know. You know, you look at all the players they've lost over the last few years. It's really difficult to continue to enhance your brand when you lose that many players.
Pierre, it's an exciting time, obviously, for hockey fans. Camp's underway. We have an exhibition game. Fans in Vegas over the moon. They scored 9 goals in their game against Vancouver. And you know, this is a time of year where I more or less don't pay attention to any of the results, or I'm just waiting to see the makeup of the rosters, and then we get really serious about the season ahead. But for those who are hanging on every shift in an inner squad game or a scrimmage when it comes to somebody like Charles Hudon or Michael McCarron, who's back in the middle and playing tonight against the Bruins in Quebec City, what should the expectation level be for these guys?
How is their consistency from shift to shift? Can they dominate a shift? Do they get exposed in zone coverage-wise? What's their ability to win one-on-one battles? And then you measure that over the course of an exhibition season or a preseason, depending on how you want to call it. But that's the most important thing, is a consistency from shift to shift for young players. That's what you're looking for. And you'll see this as the tempo of training camp gets higher and the pace of play gets better, then you'll know, okay, yes, he can do it, or no, you know what, he just can't do it, and he's not ready for this.
Yeah, like, people will jump to conclusions tonight, for example. You look at the roster the Bruins are icing, right? And it's not an NHL team. So if you have a bubble guy or guy fighting to make a team, you expect him to stand out in a situation like this, right? It's when you hit game 8 of the exhibition season, when you have mostly NHL rosters set, that's when it really matters, right?
No question. No question. And for young guys, what you're trying to do now is forge your way onto those roster positions so that you can remain in camp and get opportunities to play in the big games. That's what young players have to understand. And now they're just so well informed by their agents, and usually the assistant coaches try to help them too. But it's tough for first-time guys to really get a sniff. But if you can forge your way onto the roster deeper into the preseason games, that really helps a ton. It really does.
Go ahead, Mitch.
Well, Pierre, just what about the veteran players? Like, we know every team has to address a certain amount of them in these preseason games. And, you know, the players will always say, you can't play like you don't want to get hurt, because that's when you do end up getting hurt. But how do you balance, you know, being careful out there since it's a preseason game and not pushing 100%, but at the same time playing a solid game?
Young guys can't afford to do that. Young guys have to play. They got to forge their way on. That's what I was talking about before. Older guys, you're just trying to get your timing, you know, whether it's reading a play through the neutral zone or understanding cycle responsibilities or making you sure you understand your face-off assignments, just getting used to the tussle and the pushing of bigger bodies and quicker, more athletic bodies. But again, that's veteran players really don't have to establish much. They're not going to lose their roster position just because of the salary cap and the guaranteed contracts. Younger players who want to attain those contracts and get to that level, those guys can't mess around. They got to push hard. I mean, they got to push really hard.
Okay, since you're talking about young players, at what point as a coach or as a management staff do you start evaluating the young players and their situational awareness? Do you do that from game 1 of the preseason?
I would have started it in the rookie camp. I was telling you, Rod, before we came on, I was watching under-16 players this weekend, some of the better kids in the eastern part of the United States and even some Canadian kids down at a tournament in Springfield, Massachusetts. And they all can really skate, and they can all can really shoot. So you talk about situational awareness. What am I evaluating when I'm trying to evaluate those players? I'm evaluating their ability to digest information and make plays. And the faster, the better. They can all skate fast. They can all, at this level, they can all skate fast. So I know that. How are they going to process information and make plays at a fast level? That's what I'm watching for. So I'm always watching for that.
I think a lot today, because I think it gave us a chance to see those guys in the game situation. I think the fact that we didn't have any scrimmages, they were excited to play today. I liked the pace of the game today. I thought it was a good pace for a red and white scrimmage.
All right, so there's Coach Claude Julien on the scrimmage at the Bell Center in front of 16,000, including...
Yes, I think, yeah, they did. Yeah. No, it's first days for them as well, and like I said, it was fun atmosphere for a scrimmage, and definitely different for me.
Jonathan Drouin's parents were there.
You know, there's not much going on for practices. It's different, but, you know, we are getting used to each other, kind of knowing a little bit where we're going to be. And but again, you know, when the real preseason games and the real intensity playing against other teams, it's pretty much where we're going to see where we stand with that. And but so far, so good.
On his line mates, Pacioretty and Hemsky, and those guys did not make the trip to Quebec City. There'll be another game in Quebec City. Tomorrow afternoon, Pierre, I think at about 3:30, going to be a significant announcement involving Jonathan Drouin.
Yeah, Pierre, at the Francophone Super Hospital that's nearing the end of its construction right downtown, they're going to be announcing a 10-year charitable commitment by a notable...
Oh, it's Drouin.
Jonathan Drouin is going to be presented as person who's making this commitment, fundraising commitment. We don't know the dollar total, but it'll be a 10-year deal.
That's fantastic. I mean, it just shows you, I think this started a long time ago with Mr. Béliveau, and then it went forward with all, you know, Larry Robinson and a lot of the old Montreal Canadian players on those great teams in the 70s, and then obviously Bob Gainey and Larry, and then you look at what Sacco did, you know, when Sacco went through it all and the financing that he provided just to get MRI machines. So I think there's always been a great history of Montreal Canadiens players, ownership, giving back to the community. I'm not surprised that Jonathan Drouin is going to do that. I'm not surprised at all. He's a tremendous young man. He really is.
And Pierre, he is. It's, I think most people who watch hockey for a living like you agree that, that being in Montreal in the fishbowl, it's not going to get to him, right? It's really... but then Sir Savard with Knuckles.
And I think with that kid, Drouin has the potential of scoring 40 goals. And I think we'd be more exciting offensively, and defensively for me it's a question mark, but we'll see how it goes.
All right, and I got to say, when I heard him say that on Friday, I did wince a little bit.
Well, you know, no, let's just let it play out. You know, first of all, let's get him to 25 goals.
Okay,
and then we'll get to 30.
Good, baby steps. You know,
Let's just, you know my thing, Mitch, Matt, and I've said this to you for a long time, and if I was ever involved there, the number one thing I'd do is undersell and over-deliver. Manage expectation. There's enough. You called it the fishbowl. There's more than enough pressure on every single one of these people, and that's where I think management has to deflect. I think Jeff Molson, as a new owner, when he came in, did a very good job at doing that and protecting his people. Bob Gainey, I thought, did a very good job of protecting his people that infamous preseason night when the fans were getting after Patrice Brisebois, and Bob went after them and challenged them. I thought that's kind of the stuff you have to have. But I think the biggest thing you have to do is you have to, you know, undersell and over-deliver. You don't want to overhype it because it's already hyped enough. We're talking about a red-white scrimmage. No other city in the league is talking about or having 16,000 people. No other city in the league is doing that. Sorry. It's not happening.
Again, in Quebec City tonight, Mike Johnson is back in the TSN family. Michael join us after 5:30, and Mike Farber after 6, and then Dan and Sergio with the game. Dano Gallagher and Galchenyuk, the so-called second line, they will suit up tonight. What do you want to see them? Not necessarily tonight, but if they stick together as a trio, what kind of line is that potentially?
I want to see puck domination. I want to see Brendan winning battles in the corners and on the boards. I want to see Alex dominating the puck through the neutral zone. I want to see Phillip winning faceoffs and making smart pieces of distribution with the puck. I want to see Phillip dominating down low in his own zone and making sure Galchenyuk can help stretch the defense once the Canadiens get puck possession. So I want to see puck domination both in the offensive zone and defensive zone. People are probably saying, how do you dominate the puck in the defensive zone? You force turnovers, you get the puck, and you start the counterattack. That's domination of the puck. And that's the number one thing I would want to see from that line. How are they going to dominate the puck?
Sean Campbell, once again, back as host of Canadiens Broadcast on TSN 690. He'll be here during the intermissions with Joey Alfieri. Joey on the postgame with Sean Coleman. Mitch?
And, you know, one of the younger players I'm going to be looking at in the game tonight that's playing, Pierre, is Noah Juulsen, someone who we've spoken plenty about. And I'm just wondering, when a player is trying to make the jump to professional hockey for the first time, when he's going from junior to pro, what's the biggest difference for him?
Don't get out-muscled in one-on-one situations along the boards. don't get beat in the slot in terms of turning pucks over or making the misread or being out-muscled at the point of attack, and make sure you communicate with your partner so that if you have to have a tight reversal with the puck around your net, you do it with verbal communication and athleticism. If you want to reverse it in the corner, you make sure that you reverse it at the right time so you break the forecheck down. But the biggest thing is just simple things. You know, if you have a chance to get the puck out, get it out. Don't mess with it. The late, great Pat Burns and Jacques Laperriere used to have the saying, use the window. If you're a young defenseman and you got guys on you and you know you're going to turn it over, get it off the glass and get it out. That's all you want to see.
Yeah, Scotty never had to say that, though.
No,
not here in Montreal. Happy birthday to William Scott Bowman.
He's listening. I sent him a note before. 83 years young.
Unreal.
Ah, way to go, Scott. He's the toughest 83-year-old you'll ever meet, I'll tell you that. Don't fight him.
So let's say you've got a couple players who are battling for a roster spot, and they might have an idea that they're going after the same spot. And I'm looking at the lineup tonight in Quebec, Pierre. Torrey Mitchell and Mike McCarron are both going to be lining up at the center position tonight, and we have a feeling they could be fighting for the same roster spot. What's that dynamic like, especially when it's a veteran versus a young player on the same team?
Well, I know both people, but I, you know, knowing Torrey a little bit more than Michael, the biggest thing about Torrey is he's a gentleman. He's a professional. He understands that this is getting near the end for him, so he's going to be supportive. He understands you can prolong your career as an older player without beating young guys down, and I would expect that he would be extremely supportive of not only Michael, but all the young ones. I think young Audet's playing in the game tonight too, isn't he?
Yes.
A player like Torrey is going to help those guys because he'll remember when he got his opportunity coming out of Hotchkiss and University of Vermont and then finally getting his chance with San Jose. He'll remember that, and he'll remember the guys that helped him, and that's really an important part of this. I'll tell you this, I'll remember being in training camp in New Jersey as a player, and I'll remember somebody like Phil Russell was really good with young players. I'll remember Ronnie Lowe, the old goalie, and Chico Resch. They were great with young players. They really were. And I was a young one, and they were really encouraging. They never got negative with you, even if you made mistakes. It was a healthy environment, and that's what you want to have when you're going into these situations with older players.
Pierre, just on that front, if you're making up a roster, what are you looking for a 13th forward or a 7th defenseman?
13, that's a good question. Everybody's got their own opinion on that one. That's an opinion one. My 7th defenseman would probably be an older guy who's got a lot of cagey experience. I'll go up, Mitch brought up Scotty Bowman's name. We had Gordy Roberts in 91 and 92 in Pittsburgh. And Scotty would tell me when I was changing the defense, at the end of a game, now Gordy was playing, you know, in our 5-6, sometimes our 7 role, don't be afraid to use Gordy at the end of the game. And I'd be like, why? And he'd be, because he knows the rule book. He'll know when to tackle a guy. He'll have the respect of the officials, and he'll get away with it. So with those 7th defensemen, usually you want older guys that understand the rhythm of the game, can help younger players. They're almost an extension of the coaching staff. The difference I would be with a 13th forward, I wouldn't be afraid to have a younger guy in that position. And I would try to say, here, learn the power play, learn the penalty kill. 13th forward is not going to kill you if it's a young guy. 7th defenseman, if it's a young guy, could kill you. And they're not getting a lot of reps. So that's why I would use a younger guy in the 13th forward, and I have an older guy in the 7th defense.
So Mark Streit is like a perfect...
He's 7.
Yeah, he's 7. A perfect 7, as opposed to someone like Greg Pattern, who would go 8 weeks without playing. 8 weeks
correct.
Without playing. Pierre, just before we let you go, the situation in Toronto involving Joffrey Leupel is more than a little intriguing.
Perplexing.
He's claiming the Leafs are cheating, and it wouldn't be the first time somebody threw some kind of accusation at Lou Lamoriello in the salary cap era. Basically, the story is that he failed his physical, but he claims the Leafs were cheating, and he's ready. There's a picture of him skateboarding, right?
Snowboarding.
That's fine. Skateboarding and golfing are fine, but passing an NHL physical is a whole other thing. And so I would never go down that road because I'm not a doctor and I haven't been involved in the physicals in Toronto. But that's a pretty substantial charge. I wouldn't be prepared to walk down that road. I just wouldn't be because I would tell you this. The doctors I know in the NHL, and I know a good number of the medical staffs, They're full of integrity. I just can't see them doing that and exposing themselves to something like that, a charge like that. So, I think part of that is frustration from Joffrey, too. But I don't know. I'm just telling you, but I would be really... I would have a hard time believing that they would fudge something like that as medical professionals.
Well, funny thing about it, so the cheater's comment, he actually deleted from his Instagram post. Nazem Kadri liked the photo, but said he didn't realize what Lupul was implying. So here's my question to you, Pierre. When do NHL teams start their social media training this year?
They should always do it. You know I'm not a big fan of it, but I think you should always... No, I really am not. And you see how many people are getting in trouble using it because they allow their emotions, or sometimes late at night they allow adult beverages to get involved and things start to flow when they shouldn't. I would say right from the start, in fact, if I ever went back to run a team, one of the things I would do, I'm telling you straight up, I would have somebody solely responsible for teaching these people and making sure there was like a clearinghouse on social media, both for the team and for the individuals that were part of the team. I mean that sincerely.
Not everybody waits until late at night for those adult beverages to start rolling.
No,
and by the way, bust open a bottle of champagne. I'm sure Scotty appreciates your attempt to turn him into Benjamin Button, but he's actually 84 today, Pierre. Is that unreal?
Well, that just shows you how fast time flies, because I'll remember being at his 80th birthday like it was yesterday. I'm just telling you.
Yep.
And in Chicago, a surprise party in the summer, and that was one of the more special afternoons I've had. It was the league was kind enough to have the Stanley Cup there, and it was a very emotional day, but it was a blast. And oh wow, so there you go, Scott. I'm sorry, I tried to make you younger. You're 84. Darn it. You're the toughest 84 ever.
All the best from everybody here at TSN 690, Scotty.
Thanks. I'm sure I'll be getting it now. He's going to call me. There you go. No,
actually, he's probably angry at me at this point.
Oh, jeez.
We'll talk tomorrow.
I'm proud of that. All right, I look forward to that. Take care, everybody. Have a good night. Happy birthday, Scotty.
Hockey insider Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub, with 6 locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
Your friends at Laval.